Should we record some silence?
Yeah, we should.
But my chair's squeaky, I'm sorry.
And the wind, the howling gales.
Yeah, I'm ruining it.
What's the name of this storm?
Imogen.
Okay, let's listen to Imogen for a few seconds.
Hello, everybody. It's time for a podcast. This podcast being Linux Voice Podcast. Podcast series 4, episode
3?
Series 3, episode... It's a book. It's 4 syllables. I don't know what episode it is.
It's episode 3.
It's episode
series
3.
4, episode 3.
I think that's right.
Why is our memory right, so bad?
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Oh, you can nod. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, let's hope that things pick up from that inauspicious start. My name's Andrew Gregory.
My name's Ben Everard.
My name's Graham Morrison.
And I'm Mike Saunders.
And in this fun-packed podcast, we've got news. We may or may not have a neuron to vocalise.
You're changing the order around here. Wow, cool.
Well, you know, to maintain interest.
Yeah. I don't think we... I think.
We may or may not have a voice of the masses. No, we don't.
But we've got a brand new section there.
Also, the latency to Germany is really good today.
Hangouts
is working remarkably well.
Oh, look, it's Mike. Mike's in the room. We're all in the room. We're in the same room at the same time, in the same place, in the same time zone, in the same currency area, which is wonderful. So if you want to keep listening, there may be some news and discoveries. And those are the things for which we are internet famous. We also produce a magazine which is famous in the real world and on the internet, and you can subscribe to that by going to shop.linuxvoice.com or by going to Barnes & Noble or WH Smith's or Tesco's or the select but perfectly formed band of Sainsbury's stores that stock us.
We should mention Beep Beep Yar.
We should mention Beep Beep Yar.
Yeah, if you're already subscribed, why don't you buy a copy of Beep Beep Yar?
So that's our book aimed at teaching kids how to code, a bit like Hello Ruby, but aimed at slightly older kids. And also we promised that it won't take us over, almost 2 years to deliver.
And we have a nice set of interactive puzzles to go with it. You can sort of put your learning into practice.
Yep, and there'll be a parent's guide as well, which will, if you want the parent's guide, to explain what your kids are learning so they don't outstrip your knowledge.
It's about halfway through at the moment on the Kickstarter, so unless it gets to 20,000 it won't happen, but I think it's looking quite good.
Yeah,
considering we've been too busy on the magazine really to put many updates on there.
We've been creating the best magazine possible.
The feedback has been really good.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah,
shall we crack on with the news?
Let's. I'm sorry that intro was so rambly and half-baked.
It's not a problem.
It's all right. Should we solve that by rambling a bit more about the intro?
Oh, no. just kept digging, haven't I?
Right, the news. This fortnight, it's less than a fortnight, this time period. The first item this time period is the Ubuntu tablet. This is a computing device from Canonical and BQ that will come without a keyboard, designed to be used with a keyboard. And I believe, Graham, you have the lowdown on the tablet.
Well, I saw it in action on a Hangout with Canonical last week. So I've not actually played with the device myself. In fact, I don't think they're going to be available to purchase until March or April. They're going to be launched at the Mobile World Congress, which I think is in Barcelona in a week or two. So this is basically an Ubuntu phone, the Ubuntu Touch Edition that you've been able to get on the Meizu and BQ phones. But what we've all been kind of excited about ever since the Ubuntu Edge campaign, ever since Mark Shuttleworth did that nifty presentation and they tried to raise $10 million or $20 million, was the convergence mode, which turns your smartphone tablet into an Ubuntu desktop, the same Unity desktop that you get with a default Ubuntu installation. And that's exactly what I saw when they did their Hangouts. They did a live demo of this convergence mode. Basically, you can flick a switch or pair with a keyboard and mouse, and the full screen, usual app usual UI that you see on a phone or a tablet dissipates into a WYSIWYG drag windows around normal desktop environment, just like you get on Unity. The idea being that if you want to use a keyboard and a mouse and you want to do some proper productive work with a keyboard, just turn the thing around, plug things in and start typing away.
I think convergence is one of those things like virtual reality that's been just on the on the cusp around the corner for quite a while. But do you think they'll pull it off this time from what you've seen?
I think it's definitely working. I think if you remember, Alan Pope had like a version of it working at OldCamp. Oh, you weren't there, Mike, but he had it running on a phone. So I think there's been builds you can test for quite some time, and you can test them on some Nexus devices now.
Alan Pope of the Ubuntu podcast fame.
Yes, yeah, that Alan Pope. I think it's a really exciting technology, a really exciting development. Honestly, I don't know whether it's exciting enough for the general public to race and buy these devices. I hope so, but I think it's a bit niche.
I can honestly say I can't think of a single situation in which I would want a convergence device. I can see how it's technologically interesting and it's quite cool that you can do it, but I just don't want it. I want a phone to work well. I want a laptop to work well.
Yeah.
I don't want the two to be combined into something that's neither very good.
But is it aimed at the general public? Or is it aimed at sort of businesses with loads of employees and bring your own device type stuff?
But again, is it... Why?
Well, then you can get your employees to work on the train on their little phones and then come straight to work.
While they're on their way to a meeting, when they're at home, when they're in the delivery room.
So why not get them a laptop?
Because they will also need to make phone calls.
Yeah.
Which makes kind of sense. If the phone with the convergence device, they can be on like 4G.
Yeah.
And then be out and about and then get into the office and plug into the Wi-Fi. But
if it's a phone, you need a bigger screen for it. It's not going to work on a tiny phone screen unless you have, like, I don't know, magnifying glasses or something.
You can plug it into a screen.
Yeah, but if you're going to carry a screen around, carry a laptop.
Yeah, but maybe if all you do is word processing, and in fact, one of the examples they showed was LibreOffice running on X11. Inside, I guess it's Snappy Core or one of their containerization things. And the performance was really good. And so, okay, for hackers who are building software and doing other stuff, that it's never going to be powerful enough. But maybe we're going to get to a point where you do have just a single computing device.
But if it's only for word processing, Android does it fine.
But
it's got to be complicated enough to need a full Windows mode, yet not complicated enough to need a laptop. And I just don't think that gap is very big.
I think it's a big enough gap to have given the whole development enough momentum, enough people care about it. I mean, I if you look at the world seems divided into people who run apps full screen and are quite happy with it, and people who actually run multiple windows. So you might have a terminal open and you might have, you know, you'll have LibreOffice open at the same time, or you have a web browser open at the same time. And maybe you don't want full-on convergence mode. Also, they showed the way that you can split the screen like you can in, I think some iOS version does it, and maybe it's coming to Android, where you can basically lock two halves of the screen to two separate apps. I guess it's just another option.
Yeah.
So you can have a browser one side and the word processor the other. But you're right, why do you need the X11? I don't know, you could get an install on anything, so it's getting closer. I mean, I carried around a Nexus 10 for a while, I don't know if you remember, with a keyboard, and actually used it for some proper productive typing, and I quite liked it because it was smaller and lighter than a laptop. But I'm being devil's advocate here, because I really don't mind carrying a laptop either for proper typing work.
Don't do all of your typing on a laptop.
No.
Have a proper keyboard. Big chunky, clicky-clacky keyboard.
Yeah, split if you prefer that. I find them much more comfortable, split keyboards.
Well, there you go then. So there's your device when you're out and about. You get home, you plug it into your keyboard, so you don't have to. It's an anti-RSI device. That's what the Ubuntu Convergence mode is.
One of the projects I've got that I'm sure we've all got these things we want to do when we've got the time, and it's to build a laptop with a good, comfortable keyboard.
Build a laptop.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple. It's just a Raspberry Pi or small ARM-based device, a battery, a keyboard and a screen. What is there to a laptop? I mean, I don't care if it's shaving a few millimetres off the width. Who cares? If you're carrying a laptop, carry a nice one that's fun, you know, you can use. that sit at, you can sit at comfortably. I also want to have it so that you can raise the screen up, so they're not locked together, so you can have the screen at the proper height, a nice keyboard. And I think we're just so tied into getting all the thinnest, lightest keyboard. Who cares if it's an extra pound heavier? Get a bit stronger and carry a proper keyboard around.
I like thin keyboards.
I find them like, have you tried the new MacBook one?
No, I haven't.
It's like tapping on glass.
I mean, like the Surface keyboard. I hate the Surface keyboard.
I haven't tried that.
Oh.
I prefer bigger keyboards, but I can live quite happily with my laptop keyboard.
Okay. I want a proper keyboard, proper mouse, and a screen that I can have at a proper angle rather than hunched over. Until I can no longer sit up straight.
You suffer the worst from RSI-like symptoms, though, don't you, out of all of us? So it's, you know, you've looked into it more than we have, probably. Although Mike did for a long time, I remember.
Yeah, but I'm back in my previous life in another country. But I did get one of those split keyboards.
I used one of those for years.
The Microsoft
ones. Pro.
It's actually a Microsoft product I was happy to use.
Their keyboards were really good.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It really did help.
Yeah, and even aside from the whole keyboard aspect, just the hunched over thing you have with a laptop, where you either got the screen's just at a horrible, horrible height. I don't understand how you guys can use them as your main computers.
So you're going to have like a sort of like two metal poles where you slide the screen up and down. I'm looking forward to seeing this.
I haven't quite decided how it worked, but my initial idea, is that you can just slide up and maybe have a third one out the back so you don't have it so far forward.
But, you should document this for Linux Voice magazine.
It's about having the time to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to take a saw to a regular keyboard as well to get it smaller. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work. But, that's the convergence device I want. Converging my laptop and my desktop. Right, let's move on to some of the news. Dutch Consumer Bond, the largest consumer protection group in the Netherlands, is suing Samsung. So they've got to provide updates for Android devices for 2 years from the time of sale.
They don't even do that already?
No.
That's very sad.
No.
That Samsung doesn't do that.
It is very sad, but I don't think we should be unfairly pull Samsung out for this. Most Android device makers.
I just mean that in general. You buy a product, you've got to have some. Well, because you have to have at least a 2-year warranty, don't you? That it's not defective on typical products, at least in the UK.
In the EU,
So if your phone, the day after you buy it, it's got massive security vulnerability in it, then it's technically defective, isn't it?
Is it defective? I don't know.
Well, maybe they'll just do security updates and not worry about any OS updates, but which is what they're aiming at.
Yeah, but that'll be some. That's what would be my main interest. Yeah,
because you can't guarantee as well that the next version of Android won't require particular features of the CPU that you don't have in order to not run like a slug. So just security updates would be fine.
Yeah.
But
So they're suing Samsung.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still rocking an S3 mini phone, which is probably pretty dated by geek standards. It's coming up to 3 years old now.
Well, when did it stop getting updates? When did it last get updates?
I don't think I ever recall getting a single update, although I do tend to disable absolutely everything on the phone, on these phones, to stop it just downloading stuff constantly. So I better not criticise Samsung on that one. But you do see it occasionally. It pops up in the news that many, many millions, tens of millions of phones have got a vulnerability because they're not being patched. So.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative is you go down the Apple route and they force stuff down you and put horrible music on your devices.
Download 5 gigs in the background on your 3G connection.
But,
imagine that on a smart TV. They can make you watch stuff.
Oh dear.
That'd be awesome.
Would it?
Yeah.
Well, lots of them have adverts that you turn on the TV and you get like a banner advert from your smart TV.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's appalling.
Yeah, who puts the advert up?
Well, for example, our TV does that, which is Panasonic. There is an option. I know that there are models that you can't turn it off, but there is an option, and it's obfuscated, so you can't easily find it. It's not turn ad off. It's like, exempt yourself from, third party
messages
something.
Carefully selected partners.
Hidden in 3 or 4 submenus.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. That makes me feel horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, Ben looks sad.
I am sad.
If the television was free, then maybe that's acceptable, but
paying to view adverts.
Yeah.
So you're just watching TV and it puts up adverts at the bottom?
No, when you... When you go into the smart... When you turn it on, firstly, yeah. You get a banner. It's a static banner advert, like an animated GIF. Yeah. And when you go into the smart TV mode, which I very rarely use, actually, you also got the same banner across the top of the smart TV options.
Oh, dear.
Welcome to the future, Ben.
I don't want the future.
No, it's all right. Back. You get your Raspberry Pi powered laptop with this.
That won't have adverts. Right, let's move on to, I would say, some happier news, but it's no happier.
Yeah.
This is Lincolnshire County Council has been struck by a ransomware attack. The very sort of thing we discussed last time in the podcast about being able to watch them in real time. Unfortunately, I missed this one in real time. But did catch up with that afterwards. They're asked for £350, was the news story, so I assume they're asked for a Bitcoin.
The BBC reported that they had asked for £1 million.
Yes, and then it turned out they hadn't asked for £1 million, they'd asked for £350.
Just one Bitcoin.
Yeah. I assume someone's running around the BBC offices going, "What's a Bitcoin? What's a Bitcoin? What's a Bitcoin?"
1 billion coins. Oh, 1 billion coins, that's £1 million.
Or just one bit of a coin. Take some scissors to a penny. There you go. Have your Bitcoin. According to Lincolnshire County Council, this was a zero-day attack, which I assume means it's not a zero-day attack. We don't want to admit we didn't update our machines. They're still running XP.
It happened today.
Yeah, it's the 20th. That's a zero day. But they're back up and running, and they claim they didn't pay. But
right.
Ooh, we don't know what they did.
Well, we're still for backup.
Yeah.
Assuming you've got backups, you're fine, really.
So Lincolnshire's 5-a-day activity coordinators are all back up and running.
Indeed.
So did you cheat on those days when they were offline? We're only going to have carrots today.
But surely, I mean, if you're going to ransom, you know, blackmail somebody like that, you know, what dirt did the hackers have on Lincolnshire County Council?
They encrypted all their files and said you can't have your files back unless you pay us a Bitcoin.
Right.
And it's probably automated, I guess.
They'll just be scanning whole IP address blocks looking for vulnerabilities.
Is that technically treason? Should be.
Is it? Not if you're from Yorkshire.
No.
That's Lancashire, isn't it? I don't know.
What if the perps had been in Lancashire?
Yeah. I don't know. Is it as bad as kicking a swan? Isn't that like the smallest treason?
Stealing a whale, this is a big treason.
Does the Queen own all the whales?
She owns the whales. The whales that get washed up.
Does she?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
What does she do with them? Oh, fuck. You use them to make perfume.
What does the Queen do?
That's a good point.
She uses them to make purses.
Don't you use whales to make perfume? Isn't that a thing?
Perfume? Yeah, isn't the musk or something?
Ambergris.
Yeah. She's going around collecting all the whale vomit to make her perfume.
That's why she smells so lovely.
Have you sniffed the Queen?
I have actually met the Queen.
Have you?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. What did you say?
Don't sound really like a pleb.
Really? Yeah. Like, governor?
And she said, "Oh, hello, how are you?" I said, "I'm fine, thank you."
You smell lovely, by the way.
How's the job going?
Very well, thank you, Mom. No, she opened up my wing of the university, and I was chosen to meet her.
Your wing of the university? Yeah. Just the Morrison wing.
Yeah, that sounded right, yeah. My parents paid for the wing, so I got to see the Queen.
Is that how you got to university?
Yeah, that is actually how I got to university, which really says a lot about why I ended up here.
Should we move away from royalist news back into the world of technology and mere citizens? Yeah. Leave the noblery behind and look to GitHub. GitHub, the open source hosting software, possibly used by royals, I don't know. Rumours abound in the last week about internal turmoil within the company. They've changed from a flat management structure where everyone just did what they wanted and, I don't know, worked from home, drank beer, drank whiskey in the office, that sort of thing. Apparently they've decided that that's no longer the way to do things, and they've gone to a hierarchical structure, lots of middle management and whatnot. 10 executives have quit, and who knows what will happen in the coming years.
Well,
essentially they've gone corporate.
So I see your notes say it's almost doubled in size in a year. You mean in terms of number of employees?
Yeah, they've gone from like 300 to 500.
Whilst also removing a lot of executives.
Well, they haven't removed executives. The executives have quit.
Presumably the new policies.
Yeah, they've gone like, I want to work from home and drink whiskey.
What was wrong with GitHub that needed fixing?
Well, it worked. It wasn't...
it wasn't being monetized effectively.
We know who... There's someone we can ask. We can ask Jono.
We can Jono ask Jono Bacon. Hang on. Should we give him a call?
We should get in touch and say, what's going on, Jono? You've been there, 6 months and it's already falling apart.
Come to bits.
What they need is better community management.
This news hasn't been handled very well.
So is it... basically growing pains then, or something worse?
Well, they've always claimed to be cash flow positive, but it's quite hard to know from a private company whether or not that's actually true, or that's just a magicking number. So if they're actually cash flow positive, there's no issue, you know. They can't be like, oh, we've got to make money for shareholders.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because you see it periodically when companies start off as startups and they keep growing and growing, and they often reach these sort of problems. You know, they're still trying to act like startups, but they end up with 1,000, 2,000 employees.
Yeah, you can't do that at that size, can you?
Not really. They say Apple managed to keep this sort of startup characteristics going with a charismatic boss like Jobs at the helm, but most other companies can't work like that.
All those hipsters working in those Chinese factories sipping lattes while building iPods.
So yeah, that's we're not aware of any immediate threat to their hosting things, but
no, but
to be aware of.
Yeah, I saw some people, I think, on Reddit talking about possibly going to GitLab in the nice alternative.
Yeah, that's a self-hosted option, isn't it?
Is it right? Okay,
yeah. So it's very similar in sort of style, really, to GitHub. It's a web front end with various doodads. Uh-huh. But and polish.
Don't expect me to be up to date. I still use SourceForge for hosting macOS. So I'm probably the last person in the world still on SourceForge.
K-Album's still on SourceForge.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. Ah. Me and you, Graham, with our modern technology, 16-bit operating systems. And
yeah, it still compiles on KDE3, so, you know, it's only two versions behind.
Does it compile on Trinity Desktop or whatever that KDE3 fork is?
I have no idea. I'll have to...
Does Mandriva still include it or whatever? Open
Mandriva. I don't know. I've not looked.
Do you ever feel like updating it?
No.
Do you want to port it to QT5?
No. DigiCam's much better.
And if you want to learn more about GitHub, there's an excellent book about using it written by Ben Nuttall of the Raspberry Pi Foundation.
Anyway, should we move on to our final item of news this fortnight or time period or whatever it is?
Hell yeah.
India has blocked access to what is called Facebook Free Basics, which is Facebook's pretend version of the internet, which is free, but only if you go to Facebook.
And Wikipedia, wasn't Wikipedia?
Well, yeah, Wikipedia and a few other things as well, but it was paid for by Facebook to get the whole of India on Facebook.
A free version of the internet?
Yes, which doesn't include the internet.
Isn't the internet already free?
Well, not if you, like, your average Indian doesn't have a hard landline. They have a mobile phone. A mobile phone, obviously, you pay for data and all that sort of thing. It's quite expensive. So what they said is they did deals with the various cell phone companies and said, we'll give you this big bag of rupees if you don't charge people to go to Facebook.
Right. And then from within Facebook, Facebook serves up its own little bit of the internet that it's controlled.
Yes. So Facebook is the free internet.
This is,
and you have to pay to go to the rest of the internet.
This news has turned into the most Orwellian news section ever.
Maybe you just didn't wake up this morning. Maybe that long drive down from York was just...
It was just a dream, wasn't it? The six hours on the motorway was just a really mundane dream that I had.
All our Australian and American listeners are having 6 hours. That's just next door, surely.
Yeah.
But no, that's...
Apparently it provided access to BBC as well, so I guess you could maybe watch snooker on it. which is what the most important use of the internet is.
Is that the only thing you can do on the internet in Mykos?
Yes.
You can watch snooker in ASCII art, but that's it.
Hey, I wonder if anybody's made an ASCII art snooker game. Stop giving me all these challenges.
Hang on. So back to this news. So the Indian government has said no to this.
Yes.
Well, hurrah.
Yeah, because it's obviously terrible for net neutrality and in general human decency to sort of trap people into Facebook when we all know it's a horrible monstrosity that steals your time.
Yeah.
With pictures of the children of people you went to school with. That's essentially all there is on my Facebook feed.
You're on Facebook, are you, man?
I am on Facebook, yeah. I occasionally look at it.
Wow. You look at strangers' kids?
Well, I do, yeah. It makes me sound weird.
So, but they weren't strange. They weren't always strangers. You went to school with them.
Yeah, not the children.
Yeah.
The parents of the children, yes. And that on that bombshell, the news is over.
This is awesome.
That was good news. Missing a KDE desktop launch or a GNOME launch.
Did they happen?
No.
No, it's mostly missing Linux.
Yeah. Okay, so that despite the ordering in the beginning, we're going to have Finds of the Fortnight next?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's just jazz. You play the silence between the notes.
So this is... we didn't really think about doing this podcast before now, and of course we're all together and it's a great opportunity to get together and do a podcast, so I have not asked the IRC channel for their finds. So it's just down to us, but I do have some what I think are really good finds. So shall I go first?
Please.
So that everything else is, you know... Well, the first thing is that if you run the OwnCloud app on your phone, which is highly recommended, open source, you can install it through the F-Droid repository package manager. You've been able to synchronize uploading your images and videos to your own cloud servers for quite some time. But the real breakage in that is that it's always duplicated your photos or videos folder. So the feature itself, it's like Google offers. If you take a photo with your phone, the photo is automatically uploaded to your own cloud storage. But on your phone, up until now, it created a copy of the photo. So you had two copies of all of your photos and videos, which for most storage devices is crippling. But not anymore, not with the latest beta client. You can choose whether to keep the original, to replace the original, or to just link to the original.
Is that a change in the client? Because we've also recently updated the server. Is that a change in the client or the server?
I think it's a change in the client, because I actually, I've been following, this has been a bug on the OwnCloud Android client for 2 years, and there's 100 comments on how important this is. It makes the app useless for that particular feature. So it's the OwnCloud client, because it's a complicated problem to solve.
Yeah.
And also my photos go to my own cloud instance anyway.
I've also been following another bug on OwnCloud recently. It's actually not a bug in OwnCloud itself. Well, depending on who you believe, it's a bug or a feature in OwnCloud. But the issue is with Apple, Macs, you've always been able to on OwnCloud select loads of files and download them, and you get a zip file containing all the files you've selected. Quite a handy feature. Doesn't work, and it hasn't worked on Apple's, because it throws up this error with the zip file. The reason it throws up an error with the zip file is because Apple have been using a zip command line tool that was last updated in 2005. And the zip file format, it changes all the time. It sort of it's like upgrades to it. And this was, I can't remember exactly what changed in it, but and Apple just, in all these years, all these updates where they, they can manage to push music to your iPhone, but they can't update their zip clients.
So.
That's pretty lame, yeah.
I'm actually reading these discoveries off the OwnCloud Notes app on Android, which is really good. The second discovery, I think this is to do with Google's Cardboard. Now, this is the 3D virtual reality headset that Ben discovered or found ages ago, and I found as a result of his finding it. This is the Google Cardboard camera. So this is an app that you can install on your Android phone and use with your Google Cardboard virtual reality headset. But it's the most amazing piece of software. What you do is you install the camera app, you launch the camera app, you hold your phone in portrait mode, you start taking a photo, basically, and you move the... I'm doing the actions here, but you can't see them, obviously. You move your camera 360 degrees in a not very scientific or accurate way around your location. A bit like how when you take a panoramic shot in any other camera app. Leave it for a few minutes to process the data. Don't know whether it processes it offline or online. I suspect online. And what the Google Cardboard camera app does is calculate not only a stereo panoramic view of what you've just scanned. You don't take separate photos, Whoa. You just pan. It's in 3D.
But how? What? How is that possible?
So it's exploiting the parallax in as you move. So basically, it's like photogrammetry. It's calculating, and I've done this. I can show you later on. I've done the bedroom, and I've never even with just the cardboard, the immersion when you look at a room like this or your bedroom, something you're familiar with, is freaking because your brain immediately locks into it. It's 3D, and then you take off the thing, you realise you're not facing in exactly the same way they were doing. But it's amazing. It just takes a minute, and you're creating these 3D environment maps and you can really see that. Okay, so we're just on the dawn of what virtual reality might be about. But when they're small, you know, when you don't have to think about them, they're not big headsets, and you can see people just taking like photo snapshots of places they've been to or visiting places like this. It's really remarkable.
Google.
Yeah, it's the Google Cardboard camera. So it's not the Google camera. It's not a cardboard camera. It's this. It's I'm amazed that nobody makes a bigger deal out of it.
Well, they had. This one, it was released a few years ago now, but I thought it was really cool. But it was one where you could take a photo and then change the focal point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's after you'd taken it.
That features part of the normal Android camera app. So you have to install this Google Cardboard camera app. But the results were really amazing.
Because you can imagine a world in which, like, I don't know, loads of people upload that sort of thing to Wikipedia. So you could just, you know...
I mean, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But it's not. It does this strip of 360 degrees. It doesn't. If it doesn't do the ceiling and it doesn't do the floor, but obviously that could easily be added. I mean, they've got the clever part of the algorithm. The 3D really works. My final find is actually linked to running this own cloud notes app on my phone. There's no way to tell it to ignore my self-signed SSL certificate running on my server. Normally you can say, yeah, I accept the risks. And so I didn't know this. On Android, you can download the certificate in Firefox, your own certificate, or you can download it in... there's apps that will grab the certificate if you want to trust them. And okay, this isn't recommended for security, but when it's your own self-signed certificate, you can import them through Android security settings so that you don't get bothered by them again.
You could just use Let's Encrypt.
Or you could use Let's Encrypt, which I mean to get around to doing, but I just haven't got around to doing it yet. But they're my discoveries, finds. I'll show you the cardboard camera. Although my Nexus 5 has got a broken screen, which kind of destroys the impression. Anyone else want to have a go?
Well, I'll have a go then. Mine isn't even actually Linux related, but it's a video I saw recently, a 25-minute video of somebody exploiting glitches in Mario 64 in order to get a star in the game by only pressing the A button 0.5 times. And they say 0.5 times, that means you start the level with the A button pressed, and then you only let go of it during the level, so that's half of a button press. In this video, to get this star, he ends up getting Mario to walk backwards against a wall for 12 hours to build up speed, so that he can shoot halfway across the level via parallel universes. It just takes hacking to a completely other level. YouTube comments are normally horrendous, but these, when we'll put the link to the video course in the notes, and these are really funny because people are saying this guy should be working at CERN, you know, or stuff, and what he's done.
Is this like one of those other exploits where he's actually like reprogramming?
Not quite that much. No, not like the ones in Mario World where you actually put new code into the into the memory. Because somebody's actually created the original Super Mario Brothers in Super Mario World. That's another amazing video. Yeah, yeah. Somebody, a tool-assisted speed run. Somebody hacked Super Mario World and put a load of data into, so it puts a load of data into memory that then recreates Super Mario Brothers.
Is this by some sort of side, or can you literally do this with the controller?
You would have to be pressing the buttons like several thousand times.
But you can do it with the controller. It's actually they use exploits in the game to push new instructions onto the stack.
Yeah, and graphics into the graphics memory and stuff. So yeah, it's fascinating. It's a whole rabbit hole to go down those things because you end up watching 5 hours of just completely unproductive YouTube videos. But
I suppose there's sort of two elements to this, because one hand we just had a go at Samsung for not providing security updates, but then if Nintendo had this, we wouldn't be able to do it.
True. Thanks, Nintendo.
I don't think Super Mario World is going to leak all of your contacts and banking details. Maybe it will.
Maybe the modern equivalent of it would.
Yeah.
That's my fine.
Awesome fine, Mike. My find is unrelated to anything really.
Anything.
Yeah, it's so just south of York, there's a village called Fulford, which was the site of the Battle of Fulford, 1066 and all that. It's now the site of a massive floodplain, which was underwater until, in fact, it probably still is underwater now. It's not really going anywhere. But this site is owned by Persimmon Homes and has been since 2007. And it's got planning permission for houses, which they've still got planning permission
on stilts.
They're going to build the houses. So, it's really a public service announcement. Really, is that if you're thinking of buying one of these houses, don't do it.
What they do round my way on the floodplains is they build the garage on the bottom and then the house on top of the garage.
Yeah, makes sense.
So you just have the garage as a sort of sacrificial area. Don't put any plugs low down.
Yeah, but won't the ground still be unstable underneath and it's all soggy and
be alright?
That sounds convincing. So.
I've no idea.
It'll be alright.
Well, they'd probably drive piles down to something more like stable. Yeah.
Wow. You could have saved somebody a lot of money with that find, Andrew.
Well,
if you're going to buy a house, you get an environment agency search and they go, yep, that's been underwater.
That's on a floodplain.
Or you just look around and you go, oh, yes.
That looks all right. Local school's not bad.
Yeah. I've got a Linux-related find.
See, that's why I thought I'd get mine in, so that we could end on a high.
This is quite a bizarre find, so bear with me for a second. Earthquakes can cause Linux to crash.
By misaligning bytes and memory
and knocking over the PC.
The way that this, it doesn't happen so much anymore, but it's more back in the day. The Earth is slowly slowing down, and because of this, every so often we have to put in leap seconds to sort of realign the time with the period of the day when the sun's upright, etc. However, the reason we don't know when in advance we're going to do this, because the Earth isn't slowing uniformly, it's slowing down, but earthquakes cause it to speed up. And because of that, you can't say, okay, we're going to need one leap second every 10 years. You have to take observations and go, okay, we're going to put in a leap second in a month, you know, we need it now. And that means you can't work out the calendar in the same way that you can with leap days, leap years. Uh-huh. And it's this unpredictability of what you can put in leap seconds that has caused the famous Linux crashes in the past of the leap seconds causing NTP servers to throw everything off.
So whose fault is this then?
Whose fault?
Whoever made Earth. Yeah.
Sorry.
So yeah, I find that quite mad that earthquakes are speeding up the world at the same time as slowing down, and that leads us to cases where web services go down.
Are there any patches in the pipeline for the kernel to deal with?
Well, I believe modern kernels are now more robust than the older ones.
Up to a certain Richter scale, presumably.
Yeah. I know that the NTP servers work in a slightly different way now because they don't just throw in another second. They sort of do it in microseconds, slowing down.
When will the Earth stop spinning?
In a while.
But I mean, we've got
How big is space?
How big is space? We've got 5 billion years till the sun eats up the Earth, so I'm wondering which one will come first.
I know where this is going to go. This is going to go into Mike talking about Elon Musk and trying to get to Mars.
How did you know? You're implying that it's worth being interested in anything else except for Bark and SpaceX. I mean, it's 2016.
So if I just go to Mars just the day before the the Earth explodes in a fiery fireball, I'll be fine.
You get another 10 seconds of time to live,
You'll be in the library.
I'm going to quick look on Google if there's an answer to that.
Can you find out the best way to get from Wiltshire to York by river as well?
By a Bernard Star.
So why is the why does the Earth speed up? Is it getting? Is it like a pirouette on a ballerina?
This is. I'm not completely sure of this, but I think it's. You know when you've got an egg.
Yeah.
Because the Earth is basically gooey on the inside and hard on the outside, and you can if you've got an egg, you can tell whether or not it's boiled, hard boiled, or fresh by spinning it, stopping it, and then letting it go. And it's that bit that the inside's spinning faster. And I think it's that sort of thing that as the Earth's slowing down, the inside's spinning slightly faster and the sort of earthquake sort of hurries up the outside to realign it with the other side.
Okay.
I've just made that up on the drive over.
No, because there's the metal bit inside the Earth which spins, which gives us a magnetosphere, doesn't it?
There's lots of bits on the inside spinning at various things. I don't know.
But apparently, according to internet, it will take 1.9 trillion years for the Earth to stop spinning. So, you know, quite a bit after the 5 billion years when we're all died. So...
5 billion years and we've all died.
I don't think it's going to take 5 billion years for us.
Not at this rate.
Dry January doesn't have that big an effect.
And they were our finds.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Although it's not Linux related. But it is quite cool. I think this is really cool. We've got a wood-burning stove at home. That's how we heat our house. And one of the issues with wood-burning stoves is they heat up a corner of your house, not the whole house. And the solution we've got for this is a little fan that you stick on top of it and blows the fan out. But this fan is powered by the heat coming off the stove using what's called a it's got a little sort of strip of what looks like metal, but is actually sort of various silicony things called a Peltier plate, which it does some sort of weird physics-y thing that produces heat when you put a different temperature on either side. So it's a little bit like a solar panel that produces electricity when light shines, it produces electricity when there's heat on either side, which is quite cool in itself. But it also, it works both ways. So if you spin the fan, it heats up, one side of it heats up and one side of it cools down.
Haven't we talked about these before? Not in this kind of installation, but you've talked about the process before.
Yeah, I've known about it for quite a while, but this is the first time I've got one.
And does it rotate quickly enough to...
It spins up. It spins reasonably quickly.
And that is really cool.
Yeah, and you just leave it sat. It does seem like magic. You just leave it sat on top of the stove. And once it starts to get warm, it slowly speeds up and heats up your house.
It
makes
a
massive difference. Yeah, it makes a massive difference to the heating of the house.
Amazing.
Yep. The things you learn on this podcast.
Yeah. And they are our finds.
And that brings us to the halfway reminder. What do we have still to come?
No neurons and a brand new section.
Oh, wow, brand new section. So just before we get to the brand new section, we should remind people to go to Kickstarter and back Beep Beep Yar.
Yeah, the easiest way to get there is to go to beepbeepyar.com.
Yar with two R's.
Arr. No, that'll take you straight to Kickstarter.
What do we? Everyone's looking about. I don't know what the new section is.
I don't know what the new section is.
No, I just tried to make it sound exciting because we don't have a voice. You know. All right. Graham.
Yeah?
You've got 2 minutes to finally convert us all to KDE.
Okay. I'm sure I did this many years ago.
I'm sure you have, and maybe we all tried KDE back then, and... But, you know, what? In 2 minutes, can you... I'll get a countdown time.
I think everything has become much more polarised against KDE. It used to be kind of accepted that, you know, KDE was all right and GNOME's all right. But now I get real hate for using KDE.
I remember I tried KDE. It was all right.
I'm all right. So Graham's already convinced you to give it another go?
No, I'm quite happy with what I've got.
Okay, so Graham, you've got... Do you want to do this?
Okay, yeah, I can do that.
I'll give you
two minutes.
2 minutes to really passionately convince us all, starting now.
Okay, well, the main thing is that KDE is not for everyone. I think it's for a specific kind of person, a specific type of computer user. And that's somebody who likes to change things and modify things, because there is no other desktop that's so easily modifiable and so ultimately modifiable as KDE. You can literally change everything about its looks, everything about how the display is rendered, how you control it, how the windows are locked to the screen. It's you know, a tiling window manager, if you want it to be. It's a Windows XP window manager, if you like it to be. It's completely keyboard controlled, if you like it to be. It's the Wayland support is like one of the best I've seen, and even at this early stage, the EGL, OpenGL stuff is really well done. The 3D rendering quality, the scaling quality, you still get wobbly windows and 3D cubes. There are so many options and so many things that are only half baked but show lots and lots of potential, and I think that means that the KDE team are constantly on the cutting edge, are constantly trying new things, even when they don't work, even when they've made mistakes, and even when stability often suffers. So you've got to be someone that is prepared to put up with that. You've got to be patient somewhat, but mostly you've got to want this modifiable configuration possibility, which is exactly what I do with mine, and it's been the same way for years. I've got keyboard shortcuts for putting screens in different quadrants of the screen. I have certain windows that open borderless. My browser opens without any kind of border, so it takes up the full display. You know, you can have a panel that disappears, hovers over, hovers under. You can have widgets on the background or not. You can drag them to the panel. They're the same widgets. It's the same code base. You can download widgets from the dynamic website. I can actually go on and on. The theme engine is really powerful. You can take just the icons. You can take the window borders. You can take the fonts. You can take the panel sizes, the panel shading, the window shading. You can do almost anything you want with KDE. It's awesome.
Wow, that's perfectly 2 minutes. I don't think you breathed in that time, actually, no, did you?
I was only getting started.
I like the way you opened by saying, why should you use KDE? You went, well, basically, KDE is probably not for you. You're probably not good enough for KDE.
Well, it's the user's like the argument.
Do you think, I mean, the complexity of KDE is something, you know, the fact that it's so customizable and can put people off. Do you think KDE out of the box in a vanilla installation is good, or should they do more work to make it better? Or does any one particular distro do a really good job with...
No, in fact, this has come up recently, and I think this is, we were talking about this before we started the recording. Jonathan Riddell, the guy who put together the Kubuntu distribution, has effectively forked Kubuntu to create his own, well, along with the KDE team, cutting-edge version of KDE. And I think KDE generally does quite a poor job of creating a stable version of their desktop that puts all of its best features in the best possible light. OpenSUSE gets close, Kubuntu gets close, but none of them get close to how I configure KDE. And we've discussed this when we used to do DVDs. It would have been a good idea to like put our own desktop configuration files on there so people can... The thing is, I think my KDE configuration is so specific. When people try to use my KDE laptop, they can't use it. The sensitivity on the touchpad is wrong, the shortcuts are wrong, they don't understand the browser or how the windows are arranged.
Wow.
And I think KDE is easy. It isn't difficult. You can use it just as it is without knowing anything. But I think the people that like it are people who find a certain small aspect of desktop annoying that they want to change. And more often than not, with KDE, you can change it. So I do think they can do a better job of selling it on those features rather than more generically.
Do you use a lot of KDE applications as well? Or is it more the KDE is a window manager, panel, file manager or so that you...
I use a few. I mean, Dolphin, the file manager, has become very good. I use KMail. I think it's a really great email client.
That's what I'm thinking, because if I were to use KDE, I know I'd end up running Firefox on top of it and Thunderbird and basically lots of non-KDE software.
Yeah.
So I think to really get into KDE, I should use the applications as well, the entire desktop suite together.
I guess I use... I think there's been many more Qt applications that have been released over the last couple of years, and I think Qt looks better on KDE. So I use quite a few generic Qt applications and some GTK applications as well, but I found that since GNOME Shell, GTK applications start to behave weirdly, and they're kind of the GTK rendering on the Qt KDE desktop can be a bit flaky.
What about the Caligra Office Suite?
Yeah. Well, I think it's got a lot of great things going for it. I did try and use the word processor like full time a year ago, but it's just not stable enough. It keeps crashing. Otherwise,
that's a shame.
What I really liked about it was that I could configure it to be completely distraction free. So you can get rid of all of the menus and all of the toolbars. You can just have a word count at the bottom, which is just what I need. But it couldn't compete with Final Writer, which is the Qt-based text editor that I use, which is what I use most of the time. And I never use the launch menu either. I always use the K launcher thing for window for shortcuts to applications, which the same as GNOME do. It's such an underused feature, which I think is really good. Well, so I doubt I've convinced anyone because you already know all of this, and none of you find it interesting enough to switch to KDE. And I think that's why there are different. It's a different tool for different people.
See, I genuinely am the complete opposite of that. I don't want to spend any time configuring my desktop. Yep. I'm not a user interface designer. There are a lot of very good interface designers out there. I want them to give me a good desktop. They know what I want better than I do.
A lot of customization stuff just seems to be for the sake of it. I can't even bother to change my my desktop backdrop. Like when some banks have started letting you put personalize your bank cards with pictures and photographs. It's the same service. It's the same interest rates. It's just, it seems sort of infantile almost to want to make your windows wobbly because it's mine. But, other windows are wobbly, but they're not as wobbly
by the way that I want them to be wobbly.
Honestly, I understand what you're saying. And I think you're right. I think it's a certain kind of. I don't really spend too much time on the aesthetic. I don't change the backdrop. It's the default backdrop. But I do enable wobbly windows. Well, I did enable it once.
The file manager stuff that you showed me earlier, that looks genuinely useful.
Yeah.
Like it could save time.
And the shortcuts I've got for pulling windows around, I use that all the time. And the shortcuts for the kicker, the K launcher, is like the best I've found for doing stuff. Like I can email someone just by typing their address into it. But.
I do like, what's the KDE text editor?
Kate. Yeah,
that is, if I'm doing much programming, that is my text editor of choice. But other than that, I've never really got on with.
What do you tend to use, LXDE these days? Or?
I'm using Unity at the moment.
Ooh.
Mm. Again, for the exact reason I said, it's there. I don't change a single thing on it. I install it. I quite like the setup, and it doesn't work for everyone, but it's there. I don't, it's exactly as it would be if you installed a fresh version of Ubuntu.
I'm sort of in the middle in that I use XFCE, but I do tend to tweak it quite a bit to get exactly how I like it out of the box.
I've been using Unity this weekend, and I like everything small on my screen, and I can't make the panel small enough, and then I have that whole wasted space. I don't like that.
Which bit, sorry?
The panel on the left of Unity. Yeah. If I don't fill it up, and I can make it smaller, but it still uses up all of that vertical width, vertical space.
On most things, most screens are quite wide. It's a wasted space, but it's space that's not that useful, I don't think.
But I like the feeling of space. It's like why I still have the panel at the bottom of my screen, because I like the fact that they're floating windows. I haven't gone to a tiny window manager. And I also don't like the launcher in Unity because it just takes over everything. I find it difficult to navigate, and so I press the Windows key or whatever and type stuff in.
Yeah.
But I can't get down to wherever the right thing is. And if something isn't installed, it's not always clear. I have to install it myself. Yeah.
It's one of those things I've just never had any issues with. I can't quite envision the issues you're having. It just works for me.
And the menus, I can't get on with it. Like, I've got a 27-inch screen, and if I'm working in a window in the bottom right, dragging all the way up my mouse to get to the menus.
I actually don't do it. You can configure that.
So there's one little tweak that you
make. Don't make it, but you can.
Okay.
Well, I've seen children using Unity, and they get confused by that, so I have to disable that.
The one thing I do quite like about the whole thing always being at the top of the screen is I tend to end up with just a mess of far too many windows. And I'm like, I've forgotten what any of these are now, the things I was doing in them, so I just shut everything down. And you can just put your mouse to one place and just keep hitting the close window button, and it's all in the top left corner, and it closes everything. There's probably a keyboard command shortcut for that in KDE.
Probably. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Good stuff, Graham. Yeah, I think from our 5,000 listeners, may have a few more converts there. And I guess that's all the weather.
I think so. As the weather draws in,
it's gone dark.
Darkness descends.
I'm scared.
Yeah. Hurricane.
Somebody cuddle me.
Typhoon Imogen. Just a bit of rain, basically. But people seem het up about it, so we should all probably run around and panic.
Yep.
Cool.
Right.
That's been lovely to see you all.
We'll have a beer now.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone.
Yeah.
Bye.
See you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.